For Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Transportation Secretary Tony Tata announced his immediate resignation today. NC Capital Connection reports the governor made the announcement this morning, saying Tata resigned to pursue his passion as an author and spend time with his family. Tata is the author of 4 action thriller novels, the proceeds of which go to the Washington, D.C. USO and the Fund for Wounded Warriors at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Tata is a retired Army Brigadier General. He has served as the head of the Department of Transportation since January 2013. Chief Deputy Secretary Nick Tennyson will serve as acting Transportation Secretary. An employee was killed when a slab of granite weighing over 600 pounds fell while being loaded onto a truck and crushed the person. It happened Monday at Cosmos Granite and Marble Company in Raleigh. The piece of granite he was working on reportedly was not positioned properly, so when the lifting device let go, the slab tipped. That's according to the preliminary report by the State Department of Labor. No other information has been released. Elsewhere, a Raleigh retiree can rest a little easier at night after winning $230,000 in the Carolina Cash 5. WRAL reports the man used numbers based on his daughter's birthday to match all 5 winning numbers in the July 24th drawing. He purchased the $1 ticket from the Handy Hugo on Durant Road. After taxes, he got a check for about $160,000. The Boy Scouts of America has ended its ban on openly gay adult leaders. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers has more.
Boy Scout President Robert Gates, the former U.S. Defense Secretary, says he didn't think a long-standing ban could last.
Any effort to do so was inevitably going to result in simultaneous legal battles in multiple jurisdictions, and at staggering cost.
But there is a compromise. Church-sponsored Boy Scout units can pick their own volunteer leaders, something that doesn't sit well with Jason Raylan, who's with the Human Rights Campaign.
Including an exemption for troops sponsored by religious organizations undermines and diminishes the historic nature of today's decision.
The Mormon Church, which sponsors more Scout units than any other group, calls the move troubling. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
A chase early this morning that spanned 3 counties ended with a crash on I-40 in Johnston County when a highway patrol trooper did a pit maneuver, that's precision immobilization technique, knocking the driver's car into the tree line. The chase began in Durham County and reached speeds of over 110 miles an hour. The 47-year-old driver faces multiple charges, including DWI and driving a stolen vehicle. The chase began around the Durham County line when Wake County deputies spotted the stolen vehicle. Troopers joined in around 12:30 a.m. Fortunately, no one was injured. It's been a deadly month in Onslow County. The Onslow County Sheriff's Office has responded to the report of 6 homicides in July alone. Stats from the State Bureau of Investigation show there have been as many murders this month as there were in all of 2011. Some residents are looking over their shoulder while others are less concerned. Police are reminding the public to always be vigilant when out and about because you never know when crime will strike. Android phone owners, listen up. Nearly 1 billion phones can be hacked just by getting a picture through a text message. Users don't have to open the message for the malware to infect the phone. News 14 reports security company Zimperium says the bug lets hackers take control over all of the phone's functionality. Any phone made in the last 5 years is at risk, even though Google was told about the risk in April by the security company. A fix is still not widely available. And tomorrow is a big day for Microsoft users. The Windows 10 operating system will officially be released. PC and tablet users will get the upgrade first. New features include a streamlined web browser called Edge and a desktop version of Cortana, the online assistant that is Microsoft's answer to Google Now and Apple's Siri.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Seems baby's gonna have to stay in her corner. More grant funding is available for film and television projects wanting to shoot in North Carolina. The planned television miniseries based around the movie Dirty Dancing released $4 million previously given for the production by the state. The project has been delayed numerous times and recently was granted a 100-day extension on starting production without forfeiting any funding. Applications for funding will now be accepted through August 7th. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now it's time to find out what matters with Chad Adams.
Please stand by.
We now take you live to the Institute of Rational Thought for a special broadcast. Hard-hitting interviews and relevant information to make your day. It's Chad Adams.
Good afternoon. Nice, warm, summery day. Very interesting day politically. They all are. It's just for different reasons. Kind of fascinating. So I'm reading through emails, you know, and I get I'm on a lot of people's different announcements. When there's an announcement about something, I get a lot of them. So one of them I receive is the governor's. I'm on their press list, so I get their stuff. And it's funny because I'm reading it, and I'm reading through what the governor, you know, his priorities, what he's trying to get people to do. You know, here's what we've done. You know, we've done these amazing things, and you need to be aware of it. And what most of it is about is certainly that he wants you to know that he's been appointed to the Executive Committee on National Governors. That's, you know, not a surprise there. But so then the finalizing the sale of the Dix property, the Dorothea Dix property, no big deal. So then the next one is Governor McCrory signs legislation and urges legislature to pass budget, jobs plan, and bond proposal. So it's all about Connect NC. Connect NC, his big bond project. So that's a headline. The next headline, Johnston County among local governments supporting Connect NC bonds. Piedmont Triad municipalities champion Connect NC bonds. Now, a lot of these, anyway. So the next one, Regional Council of Government endorsed Governor McCrory's Connect NC bonds. Now, the regional COGs, Council of Governments, typically are very left-leaning groups that want to spend money on everything and supported with taxpayer dollars. So anyway, so it's about the bonds. The bonds, all about that bonds, about that bonds. That's what it's about. That's what we're talking about. He's just obsessed with the bonds. Got to have bonds. So here's the funny thing. Those are, you know, a lot related to transportation. Connect NC bonds, these transportation bonds, right? So the most critical guy in all of that is certainly Tony Tata, the head of the Department of Transportation. Tata's lead guy, one of the chief champions of NC Connect and the bonds. He resigns today. Now, there's tons of speculation about what this means. Now, one of the first people to get it up was Civitas. WRAL got it up as well. Civitas, one of the first. But this is fascinating. So I'm reading through, you know, the governor's pimping NC Connect, you know, DOT. And in fact, yesterday, as a matter of fact, Tony Tata in the, it gets funnier. So I'm reading through the Insider. Today, the Insider, and there's a story about, you know, the bonds and what's going on, and that Tony Tata sent out a note basically telling everybody, hey, we've got a lot we've got to accomplish today, and, you know, there's a lot that, you know, quit calling the legislature, and because, you know, there's a lot of concern about the budget and things like this. So it's funny because just yesterday, Tony Tata is sending out a note to his employees telling them, hey, a department, here's what it said, literally, as Department of Transportation employees lobby legislators to protect against feared layoffs, Transportation Secretary Tony Tata issued an internal memo emphasizing to staffers that no cuts are definite at this point. He also asked that they use their staff time or resources when communicating that they not use staff time when communicating with legislators. While we certainly support your right as an employee and citizens to express your opinion to elected officials, I would like to remind everyone that this should be done outside of working hours and that no state email or other resources should ever be used for such efforts, Tata wrote. The memo issued Monday followed a bulletin on Friday from the State Employee Association of North Carolina that encouraged DOT employees to lobby legislators against staff cuts. Well, there seems to be a big staff cut today because Tony Tata is gone pretty much effective immediately. So he had to know yesterday when he's telling his employees, hey, don't do this, that he was leaving, that he's abandoning ship. He's getting out of Dodge. Many people speculated in the spring that Tony Tata would be leaving the administration to run for Congress against Walter Jones. You heard Walter Jones on this show last week talking about things. Certainly John Boehner, Speaker of the House up in the U.S. House, is miffed with people like Walter Jones, would love to get rid of him. So is Tata a go-to guy for Speaker Boehner? We don't know. Now, here's what Tata said. A lot of the nice things. So weeks after squelching rumors that he was leaving office, leaving to run for political office, Transportation Secretary Tony Tata resigned. As Governor Pat McCrory said in a statement to focus on personal and family matters, Tony Tata has been a valuable partner in our efforts to reform and modernize North Carolina's transportation system. His dedication to the people of North Carolina is in keeping with his long career of service to his community, state, and country. Before joining the Department of Transportation, Tata served as Wake County School Superintendent. He was there for 2 years. He was there when the Republicans took over, and then after they left and the Democrats came in, it was just awful for him, and so he had to leave. So he left in late 2010, parental dissatisfaction with the process and with Tata's redesigned bus routes that took hours to complete. That helped Democrats regain control of the board. Tata then clashed with the new members, and he was fired in September of 2012. He had a career in the Army, retiring in 2009 as a brigadier general. In recent years, he has become an author, writing 4 fiction books and a frequent guest on cable news shows. His publisher recently signed him to another 2-book contract. Along with giving 100% of my effort in the day job, I was really working around the clock, he said in a Tuesday interview with WRAL News to explain his sudden departure. There's been a lot of indecision and a lot of turmoil within the family to figure out a way forward for me. It may seem sudden, but it's not. So again, a lot of people, he has not ruled out the political campaign. I don't personally see the upside for him running for that seat. I mean, he could run for Congress. It would put him back in D.C. He had a lot of work up in D.C. working with their transit stuff up there. But everyone I have spoken to today, literally everyone to a man and woman, has said he's going to run for Congress. And that's going to be that'll be a primary. So he'd have to get out to start raising money. He has said that he's, you know, hadn't ruled it out. But again, sudden departure, very big news in the middle of Pat McCrory pushing the legislature to pass his bond. One of the chief architects of that bond, at least the transportation side, just resigns. There's no way that looks good. There's just no other way to cut it. And that was one that caught me off guard. There's all the other things I was like, you know, him resigning, you know, I figured there's always, when you're working in an administration, whether it's the presidential administration or a gubernatorial one, it's a lot. It's a stressful job. You know, it is. You're taking over. You're taking the political hits. It's day in, day out. Something happens to one of your thousands of employees. You've got to be informed about it. You've got to make a decision about how to handle it. What are you going to do about it? It may look like a pretty easy job. And certainly Pat McCrory, when he moves one of his section chiefs from one section to another, it makes it look like it's really not that hard a job. So you have Scavarla, who ran Diener and then arbitrarily decides to make him head of commerce when Sharon Decker leaves. So he can run Diener. He can run anything. He's John Scavarla. He can run anything. So it's going to be interesting to see what Tata does. Many people are speculating. I had heard that he had been looking for jobs all over the place in different parts of the country. But a lot of people here in North Carolina are speculating that this is a gear up for a run against Walter Jones, who you heard on this show last week. So it remains to be seen what will happen. Going to be very fascinating to see what happens. I do not know. Let's see if anyone is in the chat room. And one thing we have not reminded you about is the free voter ID cards. If you'll recall, when all of the voter ID stuff was going down and David Lewis, the rules chairman, tried to tell everybody in the state, and especially conservatives who had fought so hard for that, that the voter ID, the photo part of it, was really about a hardship that they had come up with a public hearing, and yet we knew that there were affidavits from people who had been charged for what was supposed to be a free photo ID, and that had undermined the entirety of the legality of photo ID. No sign yet that anybody has accepted responsibility within DOT for screwing that thing up. No sign whatsoever. So we'll see what happens there. And again, if anything happens while we're on the news, you know, while we're on today, we'll let you know about it. But we're here in the first hour still, and no telling what happens. Now, some bad news for the left. And I will talk about the Hassan Harnett tweet that went out. That was a very strange one with Hillary Rodham Clinton and the KKK and stuff, and the way WRAL covered that, it's kind of interesting. And the way I think they should get their, you know, keep, I think they should not back up at all on that one, but it'll be interesting to see what they do. Bad news for the left here in North Carolina. You remember when the Republicans passed all of this, you know, tax cuts, regulatory reform, tort reform a couple of years ago when Tillis was still speaker before he ascended to the Senate? It was fascinating. The left, you know, signaled apocalyptic times ahead. And that's what they do. They're very knee-jerk reactionaries. And it's funny, if we look back at kind of what the left would say, they said the left was knee-jerk reaction to Obamacare. Remember what everyone on the right said. When Obamacare comes, it's going to cost everybody a lot more money. It's not going to make healthcare more affordable. It's going to make it more expensive. It's going to cost jobs. It's going to do a lot of bad things. And you know what? Every single one of those things came true. Another criticism, Obamacare doesn't allow competition across state lines, which would drive down prices. Absolutely true. It is fascinating that the criticism of Obamacare, pretty much all has come true. All of it. Even the death panel part of it, which people ridiculed, you know, former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin picked her to shreds for saying death panels, but they're really there. There are some groups that are going to look at what you can get from a medical standpoint and determine, nope, just not worth it for you to get it. True. Now let's turn our attention to the knee-jerk reactionaries on the left. So when they passed reg reform, tort reform, and tax cuts in North Carolina, the left went apocalyptic end of times. Oh, it's going to hurt North Carolina revenues. It's going to cost jobs. It's going to do all these horrible things. And guess what? They were wrong. They weren't just wrong. They were fantabulously wrong. Long and wrong. So here's the headline. It's over at the Hickory Record. North Carolina revenues surpass estimates by $445 million. So as the state's wrestling, you know, and they've got all these, you know, mandates, they're trying to balance the budget. And this is what the Republicans did well. They looked at the budget. They said, yes, we know that if we cut taxes, it will create economic opportunity and entrepreneurs and capitalists will come together and we'll actually have more jobs. We'll have more economic opportunity and that will produce revenues. And the Democrats, oh, no, when you cut taxes, all you're doing is helping the wealthy. Oh, you're helping the wealthy. All you guys want to do is wealthy, wealthy, wealthy. Class warfare. That's their thing. Class warfare is really the left's kind of bumper sticker. They should put it on everything because that's what they believe. If we can just turn everybody against rich people, then the world will be great. North Carolina's general fund has surpassed its expected revenues by almost $445 million in the most recent fiscal year, further exceeding estimates made earlier this year by about $45 million. The Fiscal Research Division of the General Assembly said in an email to legislators and staffers Monday that total revenues in the fiscal year ending June 30th were $21.4 billion. The biggest gains came in individual and corporate income tax revenues, which exceeded last year's projections by $193 and $232 million, respectively. Increased tax revenues triggered a lowering of the corporate income tax rate from 5% to 4% in 2016. So starting next year, corporate taxes drop another percentage point. And make no mistake, the Senate wants to get rid of it. If they can keep hitting these revenue targets, the corporate tax goes away, which is fantastic from an incentive standpoint. For all of you incentive people out there that want to give a corporation tax money back so they pay it and then you want to give it back, you guys should be cheering because now everybody's going to get it because they're not going to have to pay the taxes. Then you won't have to give them anything because they won't have to pay anything. In May, Republican leaders in the legislature estimated surplus revenues would total around $400 million, now $445 million. But let's go back to the predictions. Rob Schofield, Chris Fitzsimon, Progressive Policy, Blue NC, pretty much the entire Barber, William Reverend Barber, all made predictions this was going to be terrible. These policies don't work. They hurt people. They were wrong. Where's the apology? Wouldn't it be neat if there was a mea culpa? Certainly we on the right would be eating our words if we were wrong about Obamacare. We would be eating our words right now. Man, just imagine if healthcare had come down in cost, if it became more affordable, more accessible, cheaper, better, we'd be eating our words. But it's not. It's blowing a hole in the federal budget, which already had enough holes to drive a Titanic through. It was already a nightmare. It did nothing but make the nightmare worse. It did not make healthcare more affordable. So we don't have to eat our words. We were right. We were right. We were vindicated by the truth. And on this one, where's the left's where is the apology from the left? Where are all of those guys that said all of these policies would be the end of North Carolina, would destroy education, it would destroy it, blow holes in the budget? They're wrong. They're off by now remember their predictions in October would be short 60 million, 100 million, 200 million. We would be short. So they weren't off by 100 million or 160 million. They were off by over $500 million. If you look at the 445 million that were actually up and looked at their 100, 200 million down, they're off by $600 plus million. That's something for those in the legislature and the governor to an extent to cheer about. They should be thrilled about this stuff. No apology. It's kind of crickets chirping. Roy Cooper's got to be concerned. Oh my gosh, these policies are working. How am I going to get votes? The greatest thing going for Roy Cooper right now, the aspiring governor, the AG, the biggest thing going for him is actually McCrory's fighting, the governor's fight infighting with his own team. The fact that he's picking fights everywhere. And the one today was no different. I mean, the one today is just kind of sad. I'm not going to go through too many of the details, but what it appears that the governor's connections, his staff's connections to another group, a third-party group, that has actually taken out polling. You remember Senator Tom Apodaca said the governor kind of isn't relevant to anything? He didn't use the word relevant, but doesn't really matter, is what he said. So there was a poll commissioned from people close to McCrory in that district about Tom Apodaca. There was another one, and you'll remember Harry Brown, who has challenged the governor on the sales tax issue, a poll done in Harry Brown's district by the people close to McCrory. It appears to try to make sure that those people know that the governor's more popular than Harry Brown. And those are at least two of them. There's an assertion that there's a third one in Bob Rucho's district down in Mecklenburg area from where, you know, where McCrory's from, that area. So if you think about it, people who have donated money, in theory, have donated money, some of that money may have made it into a poll against other Republicans. So if you're Roy Cooper, the greatest thing going for you is that the Republicans are fighting with each other. And you know, the really sad thing, I will say this with conviction. By all accounts, the governor of the state of North Carolina should be having the greatest time ever. I don't know how his staff mangled this one. I don't know if he mangled it. I don't know if his staff did, if it's a combination of things. I think there's a number of staff members in that administration that seem to be more inclined to protect themselves and their buddies than to actually be philosophically driven about what's good for the state. I don't know. But he's got two Republican senators. He's got the majority of the congressional delegation. He has veto-proof majorities in both houses. Pretty much his job, the hardest part of his job, is done. He doesn't have really a left to confront him politically. The closest thing he's got is William Barber, and for some reason he responds to that. I don't know why. He shouldn't even respond. But all he's got to do is say, I'm going to make the most efficient, effective government that we've seen. We've got to modernize and update. We've got to make ourselves more responsive, and we've got to make ourselves leaner. He can go out. That's something that will sell statewide. Be a reasonably conservative governor. You've got everything. You should be on the short list for VP across this country. You got it made. Attractive guy, good hair, friendly personality. You got everything going for you. And it's just such a shame that his staff and he have mangled that and turned themselves into where he doesn't have that many friends in the legislature, where things aren't all that good. And it should be. This should be a great time. Look, you got almost a fight. You should be having a great day. But instead of having a great day, your transportation secretary has resigned. And so instead of being able to talk about this great surplus, you're going to, you know, this almost $500 million surplus, you've got to talk about the fact that your DOT guy resigned, that your bonds are in trouble, that you've got disagreements with the House and Senate, that you guys are sniping at each other with personal vindictive comments, that you're actually, and now the news breaks that you've got a poll out there against Republicans, or at least it appears that it's against Republicans. Why? What do you hope to achieve? Your opponent is sitting down the street from you in the AG's office. The other opponents are the people sitting across the aisle from the Republicans in the House and Senate. Those, you know, but if they can take the high ground and say, look, we get along. We know what we want. We want more expansive government. We think government is the answer. We think that we can address a lot of societal ills with government programs. We can, you know, if we can just redistribute money from those awful rich people, take more money away from them and give it to our programs because we know what's best for that money and address societal ills with taxpayer dollars, that's their message. That's pretty much the entirety of their message. I mean, it's kind of bizarre. It's not a, you know, they don't have a, it's not like, apology. It'll be fascinating. Now, the chat room wants to talk about the gun bill. I have not talked a lot about the gun control bill at all. In fact, I'm going to read literally what someone wrote in the chat room. A gun control bill won lopsided approval in the North Carolina Senate Monday, a reflection of the bipartisan coalition formed in the House to delete a proposed repeal of the state's pistol permit requirement. As passed, the bill makes various changes to the state's firearm statutes. It would allow permitted district attorneys to bring concealed handguns into courtrooms, remove some misdemeanors from disqualifying a person from obtaining a concealed carry permit, and create a unified process for the application of a pistol permit. Interesting. I think a lot of people are confused by it more than anything else. I don't think this simplified the permitting process that much. I mean, maybe much ado about something, but to me, you know, I had to go through my sheriff to get permission. My sheriff had to sign, oh, yeah, he's not nuts. Now, he may think I'm nuts, but he has to sign. So there's kind of an incumbent responsibility on the sheriff's department to make sure everybody's just peachy keen with their guns. So I don't know. I do not know. But I did not follow that bill as closely. When I watched it go through the House, I know a lot of people were concerned about it, but I didn't see anything fascinating about it. But we will see. Now, there will be much more. We are going to have Don Bryson here from Americans for Prosperity on Tuesdays. Tuesdays will be our author slot. We will have authors in here regularly on Tuesday. I have scheduled one, Kevin Maurer, who is the author of No Easy Day, upon which you saw that the SEAL Team 6 taking down of Bin Laden. He has a new book coming out about drones. We're going to have Kevin Maurer in here on August the 11th. I spoke with him last night. Great guy, former New York Times bestselling author. We will have him. I think he wants to come actually and be in the studio. When I spoke with Kevin last night, he said, oh, no, he wants to be in the studio. And we're working on getting some other authors in here. I know that we're working on getting more legislative folks in here. And we look forward to bringing a lot of those interviews to you. One final thing I'll do before I get to the bottom of the hour, because there are many, many, many more things we want to get to, is this, and I'm not going to, I am going to try to never discuss the Confederate license tag issue ever again. It is interesting that this issue should be a non-issue. The governor has made it an issue. It should not be an issue. But he has repeated, he was down in Brunswick County, he repeated his stance Monday that he doesn't have the power to stop the Division of Motor Vehicles from issuing license plates. Believe me, if I had the authority to do it, I'd do it yesterday, he told a reporter in Brunswick County. The governor's staff points to a law that requires DMV to issue specialty tags to qualifying civic groups. The Court of Appeals ruled in 1998 that the Sons of Confederate Veterans is a civic group. McCrory says the power to halt the flag, the tags, lie with the legislature. He questioned whether there's the political will to change the law. So, again, he's saying he can't do it, but he says they don't have the courage to do it. I think the dilemma may be that the leadership can't find support to change that law and give me the authority to make that change. Shelley Carver, spokeswoman for Senate Leader Phil Berger, said whether the group qualifies for a specialty plate is not in dispute. Senator Berger has said he believes the executive branch has the administrative discretion to change the design of the plates. So isn't it interesting? They're just going back and forth. This is something that's been going on now since McCrory, since the governor made it an issue a month ago about the plates. It's his. He made it an issue. And so, this is interesting. Between the two most, by the executive branch and the legislative branch, the two most powerful people in their respective branches, and each one saying, no, he can do it. I can't do it. He can do it. Oh, if he'd let me do it, I'd do it. It's very childish. It's very childish. And kind of sad. I mean, these are, you would think. You would think so. Basically, Tim Moore hasn't even said anything. So that's it. For those of who care about, for the, you know, five people in the state that actually care about that related issue, it's just going back and he said kind of stuff. Just he said kind of stuff. Oh, and by the way, the author that we would love to get in here, the author that I would love to see walk into this studio, sit down at chair, is Tony Tata. Tony Tata is an author. He's also was till today head of DOT. I don't know if we'd be able to score that interview, but I would love, I mean, our producer says she's contacted him, but we have not seen that happen. So we will see if we can get Tata on here. I don't know. If he's running for the third, certainly he should be on there. And I'm going to read you after the break, I'm going to read you a letter that Barber sent. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. The Reverend Barber's letter, what he had to say.
For Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Transportation Secretary Tony Tata announced his immediate resignation today. NC Capital Connection reports the governor made the announcement this morning, saying Tata resigned to pursue his passion as an author and spend time with his family. Tata is the author of 4 action thriller novels, the proceeds of which go to the Washington, D.C. USO and the Fund for Wounded Warriors at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Tata is a retired Army Brigadier General. He has served as the head of the Department of Transportation since January 2013. Chief Deputy Secretary Nick Tennyson will serve as acting Transportation Secretary. An employee was killed when a slab of granite weighing over 600 pounds fell while being loaded onto a truck and crushed the person. It happened Monday at Cosmos Granite and Marble Company in Raleigh. The piece of granite he was working on reportedly was not positioned properly, so when the lifting device let go, the slab tipped. That's according to the preliminary report by the State Department of Labor. No other information has been released. Elsewhere, a Raleigh retiree can rest a little easier at night after winning $230,000 in the Carolina Cash 5. WRAL reports the man used numbers based on his daughter's birthday to match all 5 winning numbers in the July 24th drawing. He purchased the $1 ticket from the Handy Hugo on Durant Road. After taxes, he got a check for about $160,000. The Boy Scouts of America has ended its ban on openly gay adult leaders. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers has more.
Boy Scout President Robert Gates, the former U.S. Defense Secretary, says he didn't think a long-standing ban could last.
Any effort to do so was inevitably going to result in simultaneous legal battles in multiple jurisdictions, and at staggering cost.
But there is a compromise. Church-sponsored Boy Scout units can pick their own volunteer leaders, something that doesn't sit well with Jason Raylan, who's with the Human Rights Campaign.
Including an exemption for troops sponsored by religious organizations undermines and diminishes the historic nature of today's decision.
The Mormon Church, which sponsors more Scout units than any other group, calls the move troubling. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
A chase early this morning that spanned 3 counties ended with a crash on I-40 in Johnston County when a highway patrol trooper did a pit maneuver, that's precision immobilization technique, knocking the driver's car into the tree line. The chase began in Durham County and reached speeds of over 110 miles an hour. The 47-year-old driver faces multiple charges, including DWI and driving a stolen vehicle. The chase began around the Durham County line when Wake County deputies spotted the stolen vehicle. Troopers joined in around 12:30 a.m. Fortunately, no one was injured. It's been a deadly month in Onslow County. The Onslow County Sheriff's Office has responded to the report of 6 homicides in July alone. Stats from the State Bureau of Investigation show there have been as many murders this month as there were in all of 2011. Some residents are looking over their shoulder while others are less concerned. Police are reminding the public to always be vigilant when out and about because you never know when crime will strike. Android phone owners, listen up. Nearly 1 billion phones can be hacked just by getting a picture through a text message. Users don't have to open the message for the malware to infect the phone. News 14 reports security company Zimperium says the bug lets hackers take control over all of the phone's functionality. Any phone made in the last 5 years is at risk. Even though Google was told about the risk in April by the security company, a fix is still not widely available. And tomorrow is a big day for Microsoft users. The Windows 10 operating system will officially be released. PC and tablet users will get the upgrade first. New features include a streamlined web browser called Edge and a desktop version of Cortana, the online assistant that is Microsoft's answer to Google Now and Apple's Siri.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Seems baby's gonna have to stay in her corner. More grant funding is available for film and television projects wanting to shoot in North Carolina. The Play on Television miniseries based around the movie Dirty Dancing released $4 million previously given for the production by the state. The project has been delayed numerous times and recently was granted a 100-day extension on starting production without forfeiting any funding. Applications for funding will now be accepted through August 7th. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with Chad Adams.
I tell you what, some of the stuff that just comes across here, I'm going to try. I don't know how well I will accomplish what I'm about to attempt. And it may go horribly awry. It may be a train wreck in radio. And I'm not one accustomed to having train wrecks in radio. In fact, I was scared. I would say that I just don't have them. Now, I may have one today. It may be a train wreck in what I'm about to do, because the issues of race baiting, and this type of pandering lends itself to misinterpretation on a regular basis. Regardless of your intent, there's going to be someone that will say, oh, what you really are trying to say is this. Well, anyone who listens to me on a regular basis knows I just say it. I don't have to pander bear my way through it. I'm just going to say it. Whether you like it or not, this is how I feel about it. How do you feel about it? And your opinions are always welcome. And I will give those phone numbers out. 919-747-9421, 919-747-9421. So we're about to go on a perilous journey together in radio. And it's going to start with the Reverend William Barber, and we will journey over into the world of NC GOP Chairman Hassan Harnett and a little bit into WRAL's coverage, and we're going to try to navigate the world of black and white and people who consider themselves people of color. I love the way the media's new phraseology there. It's no longer black or white. It's no longer African-American. Is, do you consider yourself someone of color? Do you consider yourself? So we're going to try to go down this journey. I don't know how it's going to work, but we're going to try. And it starts out with a letter that is sent to the governor, and it's copied to Phil Berger, NC Senate President, and Tim Moore, Speaker of the North Carolina House. It is from the self-appointed Righteousness of Reverend Dr. William Barber. I hate to give him this kind of coverage, but I think his letter is interesting. It is from the North Carolina NAACP. It is about protecting the people. It's an open letter to Governor Pat McCrory. And part of me hates to give him the time, but I think you have to illustrate this, because he is, for lack of a better phrase, he is the chief spokesman for the Democrats. Now, they have not denied or tried to untangle that, but for the left, I mean, if you look at all the collective groups of the left, which are enshrined by the Democrats, he is the chief spokesperson. When there needs to be a big press conference, he's the guy that's going to be at the microphone. When there's a protest, he's the guy they want to lead it. The party has not distanced themselves from him. So by all accounts, he is the fly in the ointment. He is the guy that's badgering the Republicans. I didn't say conservatives. I said Republicans. But he is the anti-conservative in many respects. His answer to all the problems of the world is, if only we had enough money, we could deal with everything. There would be no poor people if we could just take money away from all the rich folks and give it to poor people. There would be no social ill. We could address everything if we could just get more money. And we could use the government to force money away from people. That's what William Barber absolutely believes in. So we're going to go through this, because it's not personal. These are the things he espouses. And it is unfortunate that we find ourselves drawn into that the NAACP's entire MO right now is about the attack on the Confederate flag issue. They're trying to escalate, and I predicted this would not go away easily, not go into that good night. You would think of all the issues that Barber has fought for over the years, that now he's relegated himself to just this issue because he feels it has legs. Why? Because it gins up that powerful emotion. It gins up, oh my gosh, if they don't want to get rid of the Confederate flag, they must be a bunch of racist, bigots, awful individuals. So that's why they cling to that issue. It's not about bringing people together. It's not about bringing people together. Dear Governor McCrory, I recently read a news story that reported the following. Governor Pat McCrory has sworn to uphold the Constitution. He will not assume powers not provided to him by law, and it is clear he does not have the authority to unilaterally stop the issuance of license plates granted to civic organizations such as the Sons of the Confederacy, said Graham Wilson, the governor's press secretary. Governor McCrory will stop the issuance of the Confederate battle flag license plates once the General Assembly provides the legal authority through statute. If the NAACP and the liberal groups, are truly interested in stopping these plates from being issued, they will petition the General Assembly. Once Governor McCrory is given the legal authority, he will resolve this issue once and for all. William Barber then says, Governor, I want to believe that these were not your own intentions, but those of a misguided staff person. In light of the long history of the South and the recent tragedy in Charleston, notice that he doesn't mention the tragedy in Chattanooga. But the tragedy of Charleston, surely you do not believe that the issue over the Confederate battle flag boils down to one of liberal versus conservative ideals. Certainly in South Carolina, it does not. No, it's one racial, but he doesn't mention race. He rarely mentions race. Likewise, I'm sure you know that the NAACP is not a liberal or conservative, but a civil rights organization made up of people of all political persuasions. Now, I'm going to personally comment there. That's a bunch of you-know-what. The NAACP absolutely is a liberal organization. It has long ago abandoned any pretense that it is anything other than about redistribution and compensation. It is amazing that he wrote that line, but that's what he wants, and the press will print it. The long history of the Confederate battle flag shows that it has been used for considerably more than a century as a symbol of white supremacy and racist terror. Now, here's what's fascinating, Reverend Barber. Your study of history is somewhat myopic. It somewhat misses several key aspects of political and real history. White supremacy, most of that was manifest in the 20th century over in a place called Germany. It was pretty bad. And our representative in the Olympics in 1936, Jesse Owens, just ripped apart the Germans in the Olympiad as an American. But again, okay, we're not going to go Nazi Germany. Let's go in our own country. Those KKK meetings, a lot of them had American flags. And the American flag flew over ships that went back and forth in the slave trade. Why aren't you upset about the American flag? A lot of those ships were owned by folks in the North, and they have a long history in the slave trade. But you don't seem to be upset about that. You seem to be only focused on hating the South. But we'll continue. Like you, I get a lot of hate mail. We're back to the letter. Here's just one example among many of the kind of hateful emails that have come into our office since we challenged the Confederate Monument Bill that the legislature passed and you signed, despite your misgivings about its usurpation of local government. And then he has a typical hate mail from some really ignorant individual that wrote some stupid stuff. This is the kind of hate that these things stir up, and which the Republican leadership in South Carolina declined to feed any further. Governor, I am willing, as always, to meet with you. Notice how he equates himself to the governor. I am so important. The Reverend Barr, I am so important that I'm willing to meet with you, even though I consider you somewhat, you know, you're my equal. I know you were elected by the people of the state of North Carolina, Governor, but I wasn't elected by anybody. Not really. And by the way, at the meeting where I was elected at the NAACP, they had to show photo IDs for me to get elected. So the Reverend William Barter was elected in a room full of people that had to show a photo ID for him to be elected. But yet, he's against photo IDs for the rest of the state. But he's equated himself to the governor. I am willing, as always, to meet with you and our team and support your taking the authority you do have to stop the issue of Confederate battle flag license tags and the moral authority. The moral authority you have to invalidate your signature on the bill that keeps local governments from deciding how to commemorate their own history. If lawyers can prove that you don't have the authority to stop the issuance of the license tags, we will support you in putting forward a bill to do so. In other words, he's challenging the governor. Governor, since you don't think you can do it, why don't you put forth a bill to the legislature and have them act on it? It is you, however, who must take leadership. Your leadership should also allow North Carolina to protect voting rights. We have protected voting rights. In fact, we wanted to make it better with a photo ID, but Reverend Barber, you were against that for some reason. He also wants us to expand Medicaid. Notice, again, he equates being moral to expanding Medicaid in his own letter. Expanding an entitlement without the ability to pay for the entitlement. Nurture public education as if the Republicans and the governor don't care about public education. End racial profiling. Let's profile criminals. And if they happen to be Mexican, black, or white, then so be it. But yes, profile criminals, but he calls it racial profiling, and provide living wages to working people. Why is that the government's job to provide living wages? This is a litany. He says we're not liberal or conservative, we're civil rights. That's a litany. That is the liberal script. The liberal script in the letter that he's claiming he's not representing a liberal organization. Minimum wage is their bread and butter. Each of these, left unimplemented, will continue to have a disparate impact on African Americans. No, actually, Reverend Barber, your policies are killing African Americans. Why aren't you upset about the abortions that are killing more African Americans than are allowing them to be born in places like New York? Why aren't you appalled by that, you and your moral supremacy? Left unimplemented will continue to have a disparate impact on African Americans, other minorities, women, and the poor, according to the best scholars. Which ones, Reverend? The ones you choose? You didn't even quote the scholars. In that sense, then, these issues are not about ideology. Yes, they are, Reverend. But about equal protection under the law. And what the North Carolina Constitution puts this way, beneficent provision for the poor. The unfortunate and the orphan is one of the first duties of a civilized and Christian state. Surely we can agree on that. Well, but you guys are against orphanages. In truth, we have no personal dislike against you. We would love few things more than to see you go down in history as a great Southern governor. Your staff, in their response to the media, spoke of the Constitution. Both the Constitution, and listen to what else Reverend Barber writes, and the Word of God call you to do justice and to love mercy, and the time to act is now. Yours in hope, Dr. William J. Barber II. The Word of God. Now he's equated himself as a speaker on a much higher plane. He now represents the Word of God to the governor. That's appalling. That's really appalling. The Word of God wants you to expand minimum wage. The Word of God wants you to expand Medicaid. The Word of God wants you to end racial profiling. The Word of God wants you to protect voting rights. How do you have the arrogance to take that high ground and think that really, that passing a law by government is doing the work of God? Isn't the work of God like we volunteer together, we witness, we spread the word? We try to bring other people to a greater place of love and understanding. Instead of dictating, you're dictating principles to the governor as if he's some kind of child, Reverend. He's not a child. You want to disagree with him? I disagree with him aplenty. I would not pretend to take that God, that I speak for the Lord God on this planet before the governor and the state of North Carolina and all elected representatives whom you disagree with. That's unbelievable. But again, he goes through this history stuff, and it's just kind of unbelievable. I mean, and that's his letter to the governor that apparently he doesn't see those things as conservative or liberal, but he continues to speak for all of this. And he gets plenty of play. I mean, the media has run this. If you look at where they're linking to his stuff, News and Observer, ABC 11, a lot of it, he gets a lot of press for this kind of kooky stuff. Absolutely. Now, it amazes. I mean, one of the comments was, I see he continues to push for a living wage despite the minimum wage having been deliberately set up by progressive eugenicists who wanted deliberately to price poor blacks out of the labor market because they were taking jobs from whites. That's a little bit of the truth about minimum wage. This is the kind of revisionist history that he and the left and the media just conveniently forget, which brings us to the North Carolina Republican Party. So the Reverend Barber kind of gives us the platform upon which to launch into a discussion about what happened in the Republican Party. Now, some of this is good and some of this is bad. I'm not going to pretend that I have some kind of monopoly on truth here. But the media has portrayed. Now, remember, Reverend Barber had really great media coverage from WRL. They almost made him look saintly. So Hassan Harnett, the new NCGOP chairman, he loves to be active on Twitter. So he tweeted out there, say no to the hashtag Democrat lies, hashtag liberal agenda, hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag keep God first. And it said, and here's the tweet. This is what got him in a little hot water. The KKK was created as the militant wing of the Democrat Party in order to fight Republican Reconstruction. And he's got a picture of that with Hillary Clinton winking an eye. Okay? So you're kind of linking Hillary to this. Now, the first part of that statement is true. The Southerners hated the Republicans from up north. They hated them. Hated them. The entire South. The Jim Crow laws. Democrats. So then Mark Binker over at WRL decides to take the issue up. North Carolina Republican Party Chairman Hassan Harnett has taken to social media twice in the past month to juxtapose Democrat presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and images of the KKK. Harnett declined to comment Monday. The chairman isn't going to comment or give interviews or tweets, but as the first black chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, he believes we have a lot to learn from history and move past it, said Republican Party Executive Director Todd Poole. Clinton's campaign didn't respond. I didn't think they would. I don't know why they thought they would. But here's what's funny. Spokesman for the state Democrat Party said Chairman Harnett's troubling comments pretty much encapsulate the current Republican brand in North Carolina. Inflammatory rhetoric. Wait a minute. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Are you kidding me? Are you flipping kidding me? So WRAL doesn't go back and look at some of the crazy stuff Reverend Barber says? Inflammatory rhetoric, a little unhinged and completely focused on anything and everything other than creating jobs or improving schools. That's exactly what Reverend Barber is focused on. He's inflammatory rhetoric, a little unhinged, completely focused on anything and everything other than creating jobs and improving schools. No, money. Remember, all that Reverend Barber cares about is money, income distribution. That doesn't fix anything. It's no wonder that everyday families are ready for a change in Raleigh, according to the Democrat Party. And North Carolina's GOP is trying to attract more black, Hispanic, and other voters to their banner. In North Carolina, 45% of registered Democrats are black, compared with just under 2% of Republicans. Put another way, 83% of all registered voters who I love this. They don't say all registered voters who are black. Here's what the news media, and I need you to pay attention because it is going to become more prominent for a reason. Put another way, 83.7% of all registered voters who identify themselves as black. Now, does that mean they are black? Or they just identify? Are these white people pretending to be black? Are they Hispanics that are pretending to be black who are self-identified as black? Pointing to a fraught racial history, I do like that WRL does go back in and proves that what Hassan Harnett said was true. Pointing to a fraught racial history in which Democrats of the post-Civil War era benefited from violent acts of the KKK might be a way to swing that balance. Duke University political science professor Kerry Haney said Harnett's tweets represent a knowing disregard for historical truth. Actually, that's not true. She's wrong. Or he's wrong. He called the implication that Clinton and the Klan are somehow linked. No, he put her picture in there. That is part of the Democrats' history. Blacks don't seem to realize that. It's part of the Democrat history. An outrageous untruth that has no place coming from a responsible political party, according to a Duke professor. Haney characterized it as race baiting. Pharrell Gilleray, a University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, so they went, right to the source, journalism professor and director of the school's program of public health, said Harnett is at minimum ignoring decades of political reality. This kind of smear ad, it's not an ad, it's a tweet, first of all. This kind of a smear ad, just ignores a century of history of political change and the shifting coalitions of the parties. Recitations of Southern political and racial history are complex and don't lend themselves to shorthand explanations. Actually, they kind of do, Mark. Hate to disagree with you there. It is certainly true that during the Reconstruction period following the Civil War, the politicians who pushed to include former slaves and other blacks into civil society were, by and large, Republicans. President Abraham Lincoln, the party assassinated standard bearer who was a hero in the North, he and his party were reviled by many whites throughout the South. When the Reconstruction era ended, the Klan and other violent groups intimidated blacks. What is known as the Wilmington Race Riot of 1898 violently drove a coalition of Republican and black citizens known as Fusion Party out of power. Some of the heroes of the Democrat Party were linked to this. The member states of what had been the Confederacy became a solidly Democrat stronghold during the 20th century when the party controlled all levels of government. In the intervening years, the professor from Chapel Hill points out, all Democrats weren't racist. Neither were all Republicans, you ding-dongs. Especially during the mid-century, the civil rights. Terry Sanford, former governor of North Carolina, U.S. senator and presidential candidate, helped lead a wing of the party that pushed back against overtly racist policies. On the I love this one. On the national level, Democrat President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act. I think Republicans wrote that legislation and got it passed. Funny the news media doesn't mention that. It's amazing. And here's the real rub. And here's what I hope that Hassan Harnett does. And I hope he blasts. I hope he blasts to pieces Reverend Barber. Because what Reverend Barber espouses is a new version of slavery. The Reverend Barber wants government to give you more stuff. Wants you to be dependent on government stuff. They want the government to set minimum wage, which makes you dependent on a minimum wage. They want more Medicare, Medicaid, more social programs that enslave generation after generation on government welfare rolls that undermine freedom. It's funny that the Reverend Barber doesn't want to push freedom. Hassan Harnett really does. So Hassan Harnett's saying, look, the Democrat past is connected to slavery. It is connected to violent acts. The KKK was a largely Democrat organization that flew American flags at their rallies. Why aren't you against that, Reverend Barber? And the truth of the matter is, Hassan Harnett has a lot of ground here to link Reverend Barber to promote. Barber is promoting more enslavement through programs, through more dependency. If he really wanted to solve poverty and all these things, he would be going community to community saying, hey, let's solve it. Let's get government out of this thing. Let's take this by the handle and let's solve it at the volunteer level, not the government, not the big government level. But unfortunately, we'll see. I'm hopeful that Hassan Harnett from the GOP comes out and blasts the heck out of Reverend Barber, links him completely to the entitlement stuff, which is really enslavement. If you make people, here's what's happening. The Democrat Party right now, the liberal wing of the Democrats, which are largely in control, are the ones that are pushing for more and more dependency. And then the people who vote are voting for people to give them more dependency and more tax on freedom and capitalism and free enterprise. And Republicans, many of them kind of go willy-nilly along with it. There's a conservative backlash and movement right now at a grassroots level to say, no, the Tea Party was taxed enough already. That's what that was all about. And they're still alive and well at the grassroots level. And they're pushing back and saying, really, if you want freedom and happiness in life, you want to be unencumbered. You don't want to be dependent. You don't want to be dependent on alcohol. You don't want to be dependent on drugs. You don't want to be dependent on the federal government or the state government to provide anything for you. That would be nice to see. I don't know that it'll happen, but that's what, and I wish the governor would push back on it. It's nice to see in the Senate they often do push back on it. So when people call you, do you consider yourself, I'm fascinated to see, people who consider themselves black. I guess anybody can consider themselves black. That's the new standard. So it's nothing, you know, it's just, oh, if you consider yourself black. So I could consider myself black. So like I said, I hope this wasn't a train wreck, but I think it needs to be said. You've got to look at what these leaders are standing for. Just unbelievable. Just unbelievable. We have much more to come. We're going to have our good buddy Don Bryson will be joining us in the studio in the next hour. The Defending American Dreams coming up. They've been out busy doing some things. The Certificate of Need issue that is out there, you know, you keep thinking, how in the world are Republicans supporting government mandating what can and can't exist with respect to the medical care you get in our state? You would have thought this would have been a done deal years ago when they took over. It is not. The Certificate of Need law is still in place. It has not been gutted. And so you are subjected to monopoly medical care in your communities where you thought the Republicans and the conservatives would have wrestled that away. But Don Bryson's going to talk to us a little bit. There is some movement out there. There is some hope out there on the Certificate of Need process. We're going to talk about it. He's going to tell you a place to go where you can vote on some of this stuff. Whew. Maybe. But we're going to be back after this. Stay tuned. We're going to What Matters with Chad Adams. Forgive the monologue. It was long and lengthy, but I think it had to be said. Much more to go. For free
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Transportation Secretary Tony Tata announced his immediate resignation today. NC Capital Connection reports the governor made the announcement this morning, saying Tata resigned to pursue his passion as an author and spend time with his family. Tata is the author of 4 action thriller novels, the proceeds of which go to the Washington, D.C. USO and the Fund for Wounded Warriors at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Tata is a retired Army Brigadier General. He has served as the head of the Department of Transportation since January 2013. Chief Deputy Secretary Nick Tennyson will serve as acting Transportation Secretary. An employee was killed when a slab of granite weighing over 600 pounds fell while being loaded onto a truck and crushed the person. It happened Monday at Cosmos Granite and Marble Company in Raleigh. The piece of granite he was working on reportedly was not positioned properly, so when the lifting device let go, the slab tipped. That's according to the preliminary report by the State Department of Labor. No other information has been released. Elsewhere, a Raleigh retiree can rest a little easier at night after winning $230,000 in the Carolina Cash 5. WRAL reports the man used numbers based on his daughter's birthday to match all 5 winning numbers in the July 24th drawing. He purchased the $1 ticket from the Handy Hugo on Durant Road. After taxes, he got a check for about $160,000. The Boy Scouts of America has ended its ban on openly gay adult leaders. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers has more.
Boy Scout President Robert Gates, the former U.S. Defense Secretary, says he didn't think a long-standing ban could last.
Any effort to do so was inevitably going to result in simultaneous legal battles in multiple jurisdictions, and at staggering cost.
But there is a compromise. Church-sponsored Boy Scout units can pick their own volunteer leaders, something that doesn't sit well with Jason Raylan, who's with the Human Rights Campaign.
Including an exemption for troops sponsored by religious organizations undermines and diminishes the historic nature of today's decision.
The Mormon Church, which sponsors more Scout units than any other group, calls the move troubling. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
A chase early this morning that spanned 3 counties ended with a crash on I-40 in Johnston County when a highway patrol trooper did a pit maneuver, that's precision immobilization technique, knocking the driver's car into the tree line. The chase began in Durham County and reached speeds of over 110 miles an hour. The 47-year-old driver faces multiple charges, including DWI and driving a stolen vehicle. The chase began around the Durham County line when Wake County deputies spotted the stolen vehicle. Troopers joined in around 12:30 a.m. Fortunately, no one was injured. It's been a deadly month in Onslow County. The Onslow County Sheriff's Office has responded to the report of 6 homicides in July alone. Stats from the State Bureau of Investigation show there have been as many murders this month as there were in all of 2011. Some residents are looking over their shoulder while others are less concerned. Police are reminding the public to always be vigilant when out and about because you never know when crime will strike. Android phone owners, listen up. Nearly 1 billion phones can be hacked just by getting a picture through a text message. Users don't have to open the message for the malware to infect the phone. News 14 reports security company Zimperium says the bug lets hackers take control over all of the phone's functionality. Any phone made in the last 5 years is at risk, even though Google was told about the risk in April by the security company. A fix is still not widely available. And tomorrow is a big day for Microsoft users. The Windows 10 operating system will officially be released. PC and tablet users will get the upgrade first. New features include a streamlined web browser called Edge and a desktop version of Cortana, the online assistant that is Microsoft's answer to Google Now and Apple's Siri.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Seems baby's gonna have to stay in her corner. More grant funding is available for film and television projects wanting to shoot in North Carolina. The planned television miniseries based around the movie Dirty Dancing released $4 million previously given for the production by the state. The project has been delayed numerous times and recently was granted a 100-day extension on starting production without forfeiting any funding. Applications for funding will now be accepted through August 7th. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with Chad Adams.
Ooh, okay. Your host is calm now after that rather lengthy monologue. So thank you for bearing with me. We promised to pick up the energy level a bit. And, someone said it was a soliloquy rather than a monologue. So they're okay with me beating up on the Reverend Barber. I wasn't trying to beat up on him. I was trying to be honest, because I think the media is not honest in the way it portrays him. I do not think the media is capable of being honest. When he says he speaks for God on all of these matters, it offends me. Just believe, and I'm not easily offended. So anyway, Donald Bryson, head of Americans for Prosperity North Carolina, getting ready for the Defending the American Dream Summit, a guy that is on a lot of issues all over the state and much to the chagrin of people who claim to be conservatives. You're probably not on their Christmas list right now.
That's fine. My Christmas list is fine. My family's from out of state. It looks bigger than it
Don't
is.
Don't say that. You're a carpet. See, then they'll say you're a carpetbagger.
Oh,
Don Bryson, the carpetbagger, came in here. No. But you have been largely supportive of conservative issues. Those issues that tell us, because you said, if you're with me on my five issues, we're friends. If you're with me on most of them, we're friends. We can disagree on one or two.
Right.
But what are the five issues that Americans for Prosperity really pushing for on the ground here in North Carolina?
This session we're pushing for five basic issues of there's certificate of need reform, which I believe you've talked about a little bit on this show. The renewable energy portfolio standard, renewable energy tax credits, which is technically a separate issue, spending controls, trying to keep in check how much we spend in the state budget, and then tax cuts. And everybody looks at AFP as just this giant hammer that goes around and views everything as a nail.
Place whack-a-mole.
Right.
And, you got out of line, smash.
And what we would much rather spend our time doing is patting elected officials on the back for doing the right thing. And so the way we've kind of set our rubric is that, we have five issues. If you disagree with us on three of them, the majority of them, you're then a problem. And what we have are a lot of Republicans that are disagreeing with us on three of these issues, four of these issues, and even five of these issues. And that's where people are problematic.
And so where are we on that?
Which one?
All of them. So we're going to get in certificate of need, because
sure,
that one, I think, deserves a little more airplay.
Mm-hmm.
But when looking at the renewable energy portfolio, we have been fighting this battle forever. And we mm-hmm. really believed that when conservatives took control, this would be an easy fight.
Right.
It has become anything but an easy fight due to the unbelievable demand mm-hmm. that subsidies continue to be given to these industries that cannot support themselves.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And what you have, we fight this fight in a lot of states. Americans for Prosperity does. And in Kansas, it's the wind industry. And this year, Kansas actually ended its renewable portfolio standard. In North Carolina, it happens to be the solar energy industry. Wind and some ag stuff play a part in this as well, but particularly solar. And I've sat down with some legislators, and we've looked at the lobbying list and figured out that there are 24 lobbyists representing different facets of the solar energy industry in North Carolina. You can't name another industry with that many lobbyists. I'm talking about, the really big names in North Carolina politics, such as Duke Energy, the Chamber of Commerce,
right,
all those people. They don't have anywhere near that many lobbyists. And so you have that. That industry has given a lot of PAC money to both the House and the Senate caucus.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but the jobs, Chad.
It's about the jobs. All about the jobs.
Right.
So we've been going through this. I mean, the House tried to eliminate it as they were going through the budget fiasco. Marilyn Avila, I believe, was the one who introduced the solar, getting rid of the, was that correct?
Getting rid of the solar tax credit.
Tax credits. Right. That's part of it. Where are we now in the Senate? Because we know it's front and center in the budget. There are people trying to strip it out of the budget, mm-hmm. make it a separate bill. Where are we? So is there any hope? Is there any hope that a conservative victory is at hand here at all?
Well, there are two separate issues. There's the renewable energy tax credit, which is basically, the way it's done, the refundable portion of that, and the way it's done is the government literally cuts a check back to people who invest in renewable energy in the state. And so it's literal spending. The Senate seems very resolute that that tax credit will sunset as scheduled on December 31st of this year, and we're very happy about that. I'm hearing more and more people from the House Republican caucus saying, yeah, that tax credit's just going to have to go. We've subsidized these people for far too long. And we're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars every year that the state cuts back.
So there's some hope here.
Yeah, feel really good about the tax credit. What I'm more concerned about is the renewable portfolio standard, which
by the way, for all of you out there that get an electric bill, a utility bill, look at it. It says it's clearly on there.
Right.
REPS. When you see that REPS, you are being RIPPEDOFT, ripped off. You ripped off. And it's there. And for everyone to see, right. It's there. You can get rid of it tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll say REPS rider fee or yep. renewable energy rider
doesn't
fee.
Mind.
Or something
I have it. I think I have it here right. in one of these pieces of paper. I carry it around, and it's clearly on the bill. REPS. It
right.
says REPS. There it is. I have it right here.
Right.
Keep in front of me. On your Duke Energy Progress, there it is. REPS adjustment.
That's right.
On your bill. It's marked right there, and it's like $1 a month.
That's right. Which doesn't sound like very much.
$12 a year for every North Carolinian. Millions of dollars.
But then, yeah, it's about $42 to $45 million a year that comes out just for residential customers. That's not counting the increased fees for industrial and commercial people. That tens of millions of dollars coming out of our economy every year. But this is all done because we are being forced to buy renewable energy after we've already given these people tax subsidies. So, you know, we passed this thing 8 years ago. And we've been giving them tax credits for even longer than that.
Where does that money go? So here it is on the bill. Mm-hmm. Everyone's paying it. That money, so the state would say, no, there's no tax because
right.
they're not collecting it. It's a private company that is collecting this money.
Right.
So here's the 93 cents times the millions of North mm-hmm. Carolinians per month. So this is millions of dollars a month. Where does that money go?
That money goes back to Duke Energy.
It goes to Duke, goes straight yeah. into their general fund.
Yeah. So what you're seeing here in Raleigh, and I think in a couple of other TV markets, you're seeing a group called NC Warren run these television ads saying Duke Energy is going to wreck the solar industry in North Carolina
yes.
and jobs and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not true. Duke's actually being very coy about this because Duke doesn't care either way. Here's the hard and dirty truth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the state gives them permission right. to take more money. It's a
regulation, so they probably don't care for the regulation, but they get to recoup costs because, as you pointed out on your power bill, there's this renewable energy rider fee. The state realizes that it costs more money for this renewable energy, and so they're letting Duke legally tack on rider fees to their bills. So Duke doesn't care either way. And so Duke is either having to build their own solar power or solar fields or wind fields and things like that, or they're having to buy it from solar or wind
so
industry.
We're paying our rate for our power.
Right.
This renewable energy pool is used, the REPS is used to build and offset cost for solar facilities and wind facilities.
That's exactly
in,
right.
In other states and now our own state.
That's exactly right.
And so it's not part of our, it's in addition to our electric bill. So it's not, that is not paying for 1 watt of power to my home.
Right. Now, you know, the other side, the people who want this are saying, well, it helps with competition in the electrical power grid. You know, Duke has a monopoly and, you know, there's not a free market in energy in North Carolina, Chad. And so, you know, we shouldn't, you know, try to come up with a free market solution to fix this. Well, one, the answer to one regulation is not another regulation.
Come on. Sure it is.
And the second thing is
to get rid of the regulation.
It's been 8 years since we've implemented this, right?
2007 and now, yes.
How many have you paid to a different power company than you have?
No, they're just the merger. It still says
right.
progress, but it's
right. But my point is that if the point of the REPS is to increase competition in the power grid, why are we not paying to several different power companies then?
The closest thing to competition I was able to do was get natural gas into my house.
Right.
That's the closest thing, to put all my appliance on natural gas, to have a natural gas hot water heater.
Right.
But still, slammed with my monopoly power
company. You
can't
name a soul in the state that's paying a power bill to Strata Solar.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
Because they're not.
Because this money goes to them.
Because they're forcing Duke to buy their power.
Right, right.
And so
a very expensive power.
So all they're doing is requiring Duke customers to buy more renewable energy, and Duke's saying, okay, well, then we'll just pass along the cost.
Kind of ridiculous.
It.
So that's that one, and we've got some hope there. And
hope so.
Where are we on that?
Well, the House passed legislation that would freeze it in place, roll back the rider fees to 2012 levels, and then require a legislative study to determine what is least cost for North Carolina's electrical grid. We moved heaven and earth to have the House pass that legislation, and now it's just been sitting in the Senate, who, by all accounts, are far more conservative
yes,
than the House.
You would think.
You would think, but they've been sitting on this for 3 months.
Wow.
Kind of tired of waiting around. Either you guys are more conservative or you're not, but what you're doing is, you know, if you're opposed to Obamacare because you're requiring people to buy a product, the individual mandate, you should be opposed to this because it's doing
wow.
the same thing for electricity.
So who are the senators that are the champions for our side of things versus those not?
By all accounts, Senator Phil Berger is very much on board with this. The real champion in the Senate, though, is Senator Andrew Brock from Davie County.
And he's been, even FreedomWorks has said nice things about him for years. Right. I've known Brock for about 12, 14 years now.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise that Brock would be that way. He's from Davie County, you said, Davie area.
Yeah, and then Bill Cook from out on the coast and Trudy Wade from Greensboro are very much on board with this.
Okay. Where are we on the certificate of need? We need to talk about that. I want to get to the other issue. The tax cuts. Hey, we found out today, I guess, that the corporate tax cut, well, I guess we already knew, but it's going to go back down another percentage point January 1st.
Right.
So we'll be at 4% from 5%. That's a big deal. And revenue surplus, we got a surplus in revenue now, 445. I think a lot of people, when it comes to government surpluses, would say that's just an overcollection of taxes. You know, they collected $445 million more than they needed to run state government.
Right.
So you think they would cut more spending, you know, or get things in line, but I don't see
that. Or cut taxes by $445
million. We could, but the governor has signaled he might veto that. He's taking credit for a lot of the surplus now, but doesn't want to cut taxes anymore. Let's talk about certificate of need.
Sure.
Certificate of need, as I understand it, in the writings that I used to muse about this on, is a process by which if someone wants to create a medical treatment opportunity, whether it be a kidney dialysis center, a hospital, any kind of medical provision in a given community, they must get a signature from the governor saying there is a need. In other words, the governor signs a certificate of need for that community or that can't exist. In other words, Don and Chad can't go start a kidney dialysis center in Yadkin County without the governor's signature on it.
Right. Well, somebody from DHHS, but not necessarily
Pat McCrory, the state government has to sign this over. So we've known this is bad for competition. It allows monopolies to be protected. It allows people to protest any kind of competition or superior service to come into a community. And yet the Republicans are there. You would have thought this would have been fixed. Why are we still fighting this? Where are we on it? And what's the likely outcome? Because all the think tank groups on the right have said how horrible this is for 10 years.
And even a lot of think tanks on the left believe the same thing, that it's just this form of corporate protectionism, that you protect big hospitals from getting more competition in. You know, the Senate had filed a bill. Senator Tom Apodaca, the rules chair in the Senate, had filed a bill to fully repeal certificate of need laws in North Carolina. And you said a second ago that, you know, basically any medical facility in North Carolina requires a certificate of need. It's not strictly true, although the problem is I'm very hard-pressed to figure out what that is. There are 36 states that have certificate of need laws. On average, they regulate about 14 different facilities or services. North Carolina has 25 certificate of need laws as opposed to the national average 14. We have the fourth most stringent laws in the country behind like Vermont, Hawaii, and Washington, D.C., those conservative bastions.
So when you were speaking with legislators about this, why is this not a done deal? What is holding this one? I mean, I can understand some of the other renewable stuff. I don't like it, and I think it's, you know, some ding-dong maneuvers there, but this one is easy.
Right.
This one is simple. Why is this so complicated?
Because the Hospital Association, who are the primary opponents of this, have convinced rural legislators, and you're going to hear more and more about the, as opposed to Democrat and Republican divide in the General Assembly, they're basically Republican supermajorities. And so you're hearing more and more about the rural and urban divide. And the Hospital Association has figured that out. And they are talking about how, well, if you allow more competition in there and more doctor's offices to open up in these rural counties, you're going to shut down your local hospital. And a lot of cases, and what you're going to find are those same rural Republicans are also opposed to vouchers. The reason is because those hospitals and those local
school vouchers,
School vouchers and the hospitals are the two big job engines in those rural counties oftentimes.
Many times, and Francis has talked about this before, and we have discussed it on the show, that in many instances in rural North Carolina, the number one employer in a given county is the school system or the hospital.
That's right.
Or
that's
both. Exactly right. They're one and two or in the top three almost always. Mm-hmm. And so you're saying they don't like the just like schools don't like competition from vouchers going to private schools.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitals don't like another endeavor coming in, sniffing around, and possibly providing competition.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So they're convincing legislators, this could shut down your local hospital.
Yeah, this is going to shut down, you know, Mission
because
Hospital.
Because we can't take competition.
Henderson County or pick up, you know, this is going to shut down Novant. This is going to shut down the Pungo healthcare system over in Bellhaven.
Right.
You know, at first we thought it was Medicaid expansion, but, you know, now obviously it's certificate of need.
Right. So where are we in this?
Well, it's The Senate dumped the certificate of need repeal into the budget. God bless
right,
them.
Right, because the budget has a lot of policy in it from the Senate side, and that's part of it.
Right. And so we're in negotiations on that. But what I'm hearing more and more from the House is that proponents of reforming or repealing certificate of need entirely have battered down that door so much that the majority of the Republican caucus in the House is figuring out, like, look, if we don't do repeal, we're going to have to do something on this. Something's going to have to give on certificate of need because we can't defend this anymore.
Where's the governor on this?
That's a very good question. The governor's been very cagey on this issue, so I don't
know.
Not
just this issue, but he seems to be on many issues. This is just one of them. Because there's a over at Business Journals, bizjournals.com. If you go to bizjournals.com, I guess that's the Triangle Business Journal.
Right.
Right. Bizjournals.com. They have a poll up about certificate of need. I looked at it earlier today, and it was 47% get rid of the certificate of need law, and it was about 40% keep it as it is. 13% maintain some aspects of it and get rid of others, which right. is really kind of up in the air. It is now tightened up. It's now 44% get rid of the law, 42% keep the law as it is. Now, that to me tells me that a lot of the hospital association folks are now throwing, sending emails around. And so folks on the right are sending emails around, and there's a battle to see who can get this poll up, because I'm sure other people are going to look at this poll.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is that, you know, there was a federal law passed back in the 1970s during the Carter administration to have a federal certificate of need regulation. And the Reagan administration figured out that really wasn't going to work, and that was a really stupid idea. And so the federal law was repealed in the 1980s. So hopefully
– that was a long time ago.
That was 30 years ago.
You weren't even around then.
Exactly
20 years ago. So the issue, though, in North Carolina is where are we? So, I mean, it's over there. It's being debated. It's 2015, and we still haven't gotten rid of this thing.
Right.
So, you know, obviously the hospital associations are going to kick up and kick some dust in some folks' eyes on this. Right. Where do we go?
Well, you know, the reason we ended up with Obamacare, I'm very satisfied, is because what conservatives did was instead of coming up with a good free market alternative to the terrible system that we had, and I don't think anybody was defending the system that we had, they were just saying no to Obamacare. And I think this is one thing that conservatives can do at the state level to help drive down overall health care costs. It shrinks down how many services are provided, and therefore right. it inflates costs over time. And that's a problem. So if you want to drive down costs, you need to increase competition. It's
and get regulations
high
out of
school
the way.
Economics.
Now, what would you say to the community whose hospital, I mean, because if it does have competition, the hospital – I mean, if there are a series of doctors and treatment facilities and things like that, the hospitals may well go out of business. But that's because of competition.
Because
people are choosing not to use that local hospital.
That's exactly right. And what I would say to that is you're not going to lose net jobs. Because if you lose jobs because competition came in town, other jobs that are going to be created. You know, you're going to have – if you're losing competition to an ophthalmologist moving in town, well, that ophthalmologist, one, is a new job. And he's going to need all these assistants. He's going to need some clerks and things like that. Those are new jobs that are being created. It's the same argument that we give for school vouchers. You know, private schools need teachers too.
Yes. You still have net number of teachers per X number of students in general.
That's exactly right. But, you know, the Mercatus Center at George Mason University found that in North Carolina, we're probably about 12,900 beds short of what we need to be for a state our size because certificate of need laws are preventing hospitals from opening up. We're about 67 hospitals short that have MRI services of what we need to be for a state our size. I think it's like 49 hospitals with
CT scans. So there's a waiting list and people are having to wait for critical medical diagnosis is largely because of government. And government standing in the way of competition, government standing in the way of access. So what are they using? I mean, could this happen soon?
I would think it could happen soon. It's probably going to be, well, I mean, it's definitely part of the budget negotiations, and I fully expect that we're going to at least get some sort of significant reform, have some of the rules repealed, some of the 25 repealed. Obviously, AFP's goal is to have the whole thing done away with. But, you know, with as many regulations as North Carolina has, the fourth highest in the country, anything we do is a giant step in the right direction.
Let's turn our attention to, since you're talking about Medicaid and talking about the budget and the Senate bill, obviously the Senate bill is 500 pages of stuff, a lot of which is policy and a lot of which is numbers. The House bill, much more spending, but 300 pages. Being reconciled by 114 people, 82 and 32 respectively.
I'm getting a little nauseous with these numbers, Chad.
It makes my head spin a little bit too. But where, I mean, Apodaca had said, look, nothing's going to happen until Medicaid reform. That's basically the hostage. Medicaid reform happens first. Whether we're going to expand it, not expand it, what right. we're going to do with it, where are we based on what you're seeing?
Based on what I'm seeing is that the Senate has said, you know, they have a model, the managed care organizations that they want to go after. The House is sort of divided amongst itself. Representative Nelson Dollar has a plan with these accountable care organizations, but you're seeing an increasing amount of the House Republican caucus say, hey, don't know if we like MCOs, don't know if we like ACOs, but at the very least, we need to capitate Medicaid, which is where the Senate is.
Well, the ACOs don't tend to capitate. They tend to.
They don't tend to capitate.
And Nelson Dollar has been a strong opponent of ACOs, right. but does not like managed care at all.
Yeah,
it's stood in the way of any kind of managed care discussion.
Right. But
a Republican.
And AFP isn't going to weigh in on whether we do ACOs or MCOs, but the idea is one way or another, you guys need to control costs. And I think you can have a capitated Medicaid system where you say, we're going to spend this much money, X amount of money, and no more on Medicaid, mm-hmm. and still have an accountable care system. Just that depends on how the care is dispersed along with the MCOs.
But also, we are a state that provides very generous Medicaid offerings.
If the
federal government says you may provide this service, we provide it. Tennessee doesn't. Virginia doesn't. South Carolina. None of the states
exactly
around
right.
us do. So we're getting an influx of people who want the Cadillac version of Medicaid.
Right.
Or, Medicare. And we can't afford this.
No.
We don't know if we expand it, we know now that expanding Medicare in Medicaid is doing a lot of damage to other states' budgets in 2017. Federal government's going to force states to start paying into it. So there's nothing good about what's happening here in North Carolina. We either have to cut down the things that we provide to people, mm-hmm. or we're going to have to just control cost. Really, we need to do both.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We need to do both. And I think that once we figure out how to do that, I think we know how to cut down on services, but how we actually manage costs is another discussion entirely. But once we make that step, which I think they're going to figure it out one way or another this session, we need to make the next step and submit a global waiver, what's called a global waiver, to the federal government and just say, hey, North Carolina's kind of tired of being this administrative arm of the federal government on how Medicaid's done. Mm-hmm. You just give us the money you're going to give us, and we'll administer it in the way we see fit. And states that are doing that are seeing massive cost savings. Rhode Island was the first state to do that back in 2009. And within the first year, they had $100 million in savings.
We could do that.
Yeah, we could.
We would have a lot more than $100 million.
Absolutely would. Rhode Island's not exactly a giant state.
No, about the size of two North Carolina counties down east. Now, let's talk about the Defending of the American Dream coming up in August 22nd. In Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Still some good deals out there. How do people find out more about this? And tell me any updates on new people that are speaking, because
sure.
It looks like you're getting a host of a bunch of presidential candidates.
Sure. Through the end of the week, people can still sign up to ride our buses out of Charlotte, High Point,
Wilmington,
and Raleigh. It's $25. It'll get you up there on the bus. We'll take care of your hotel, and it gets you into the conference, and we even bring you back. $25, not a bad deal.
You're not going to just leave people in Ohio?
Yeah, no, we're not going to leave people in Ohio. We've got some great speakers. Ted Cruz, Governor Rick Perry, or former Governor Rick Perry, Senator Rob Portman, Governor Bobby Jindal. Those are all examples of speakers that have said they're going to come and speak. Those are some headline speakers. We're going to have breakout sessions.
Donald Trump coming?
He has not been confirmed.
He has been invited.
Okay.
Everybody who's running.
Yeah.
Has been
once invited. You invite a candidate, you have to invite all the candidates because you can't show favoritism, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. we appreciate you being a part of the show. Anything else you'd like for people to be aware of? We've got about a minute or so.
Just be sure to check out our website if you'd like to sign up for the summit, AFPNC, like Americans for Prosperity, NorthCarolina.org. And if you want to see more of what we're doing on the school choice side of things, go to voicesforchoicesnc.org.
The charter school stuff you've set up.
That's
great
exactly
video
right.
on Frederick Douglass Academy in Wilmington.
Yep.
Great video you guys shot there.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So and so that's going on. And AFPNC.org,
right?
And you can find out more and you can get signed up. But yeah, you have Jeb Bush is confirmed. Ted Cruz is confirmed. Bobby Jindal is confirmed. You've got Rick Perry looks like is confirmed now. I'm looking at some of the other folks. A lot of folks are confirmed for this thing.
A lot of folks are confirmed.
Okay. Well, appreciate you being a part of the program. Don Bryson, Americans for Prosperity, North Carolina state director, busy in the legislature, unfortunately, in July. Going to be busy for the foreseeable future. Last thing, prediction of when they'll finish up the budget.
September 19th is what I'm sticking with.
Wow, because we have people in mid-October, so you're on the earlier part of that.
Well, I'm going exactly 1 month after the continuing resolution ends.
So okay, so your prediction. We ought to start a pool of all of our guests and all the people at Civitas, so we'll do that. John Bryson, thanks for being a part of the show.
Thank you so much.
Much more to go here. Stay tuned to What Matters with Chad Adams.
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Transportation Secretary Tony Tata announced his immediate resignation today. NC Capital Connection reports the governor made the announcement this morning, saying Tata resigned to pursue his passion as an author and spend time with his family. Tata is the author of 4 action thriller novels, the proceeds of which go to the Washington, D.C. USO and the Fund for Wounded Warriors at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Tata is a retired Army Brigadier General. He has served as the head of the Department of Transportation since January 2013. Chief Deputy Secretary Nick Tennyson will serve as Acting Transportation Secretary. An employee was killed when a slab of granite weighing over 600 pounds fell while being loaded onto a truck and crushed the person. It happened Monday at Cosmos Granite and Marble Company in Raleigh. The piece of granite he was working on reportedly was not positioned properly, so when the lifting device let go, the slab tipped. That's according to the preliminary report by the State Department of Labor. No other information has been released. Elsewhere, a Raleigh retiree can rest a little easier at night after winning $230,000 in the Carolina Cash 5. WREL reports the man used numbers based on his daughter's birthday to match all 5 winning numbers in the July 24th drawing. He purchased the $1 ticket from the Handy Hugo on Durant Road. After taxes, he got a check for about $160,000. The Boy Scouts of America has ended its ban on openly gay adult leaders. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers has more.
Boy Scout President Robert Gates, the former U.S. Defense Secretary, says he didn't think a long-standing ban could last.
Any effort to do so was inevitably going to result in simultaneous legal battles in multiple jurisdictions, and at staggering cost.
But there is a compromise. Church-sponsored Boy Scout units can pick their own volunteer leaders, something that doesn't sit well with Jason Raylan, who's with the Human Rights Campaign.
Including an exemption for troops sponsored by religious organizations undermines and diminishes the historic nature of today's decision.
The Mormon Church, which sponsors more Scout units than any other group, calls the move troubling. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
A chase early this morning that spanned 3 counties ended with a crash on I-40 in Johnston County when a highway patrol trooper did a pit maneuver, that's precision immobilization technique, knocking the driver's car into the tree line. The chase began in Durham County and reached speeds of over 110 miles an hour. The 47-year-old driver faces multiple charges, including DWI and driving a stolen vehicle. The chase began around the Durham County line when Wake County deputies spotted the stolen vehicle. Troopers joined in around 12:30 a.m. Fortunately, no one was injured. It's been a deadly month in Onslow County. The Onslow County Sheriff's Office has responded to the report of 6 homicides in July alone. Stats from the State Bureau of Investigation show there have been as many murders this month as there were in all of 2011. Some residents are looking over their shoulder while others are less concerned. Police are reminding the public to always be vigilant when out and about because you never know when crime will strike. Android phone owners, listen up. Nearly 1 billion phones can be hacked just by getting a picture through a text message. Users don't have to open the message for the malware to infect the phone. News 14 reports security company Zimperium says the bug lets hackers take control over all of the phone's functionality. Any phone made in the last 5 years is at risk. Even though Google was told about the risk in April by the security company, a fix is still not widely available. And tomorrow is a big day for Microsoft users. The Windows 10 operating system will officially be released. PC and tablet users will get the upgrade first. New features include a streamlined web browser called Edge and a desktop version of Cortana, the online assistant that is Microsoft's answer to Google Now and Apple's Siri.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Seems baby's going to have to stay in her corner. More grant funding is available for film and television projects wanting to shoot in North Carolina. The Play on Television miniseries based around the movie Dirty Dancing released $4 million previously given for the production by the state. The project has been delayed numerous times and recently was granted a 100-day extension on starting production without forfeiting any funding. Applications for funding will now be accepted through August 7th. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with Chad Adams.
Howdy, 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 folks. Appreciate Don Bryson being here on the show. If you haven't been to a Defending the American Dream conference, they are a lot of fun. You get to hear, you know, a lot of great speeches, meet a lot of folks from all over, and you find that there are people that feel like you all over the country. And, you know, you go there, you get all fired up, you come back home, you want to make a difference. You really want to make, you want to make a difference. Couple things we want to get through. Also, your phone calls, if you are so inclined, 919-747-9421, 919-747-9421. A couple different things that, you know, you can talk about, anything you would like to talk about, questions you have. We'll try to get the answers. If the host doesn't know them, we'll try to find those answers for you and get back with you via the show or however way you want us to get those answers back. But we're here for you anytime. So we'd love to have you be a part of the show, 919-747-9421. Appreciate the chat room. Some people, see, they stick around, and then at the last minute, they bail out on us. But we appreciate the chat room being there. I'm just picking on them a little bit. Now, over the city, we will bring to your attention at times stuff you don't know about. When you go to see the Carolina Panthers play football, if you ever get to do that, it's a really neat thing. You don't think about whether or not taxpayer dollars are supporting a multi-billion-dollar sports franchise enterprise, do you? Most people don't. When they go to a ball game, you just don't think about it. You go to have a good time and pay, you know, expensive prices for things like popcorn and hot dogs and drinks. Charlotte City Council members moved forward with the second phase of renovations to Bank of America Stadium. You'll remember Bank of America. They're the people who forgave like $10 million to the Democrat Party. They gave them a loan, turned into a forgivable loan, which really means a donation for the DNC. In case you're a Bank of America customer and you forgot they did that. The council voted to start allowing the allotted $23.5 million for Phase 2 to start being spent. Phase 2 of the renovations will focus on upgrading the stadium's 150-plus suites, because rich people really need your money. Each suite will soon have three rows of seats, retractable windows, and more televisions for many different views on the action of the action on the field. Now, remember, there's only, 14? How many? I don't even know how many games in a season anymore. 20? Let's just say there's 20 games. So 10 of those are at home, maybe a postseason game. So we're talking about a stadium that's utilized like 10 times a year for something of that size. For football, not for the concerts and everything. Each suite will have three rows of seats. This is a pre-planned distribution of money toward the renovation of the stadium. On April 22nd, 2013, City Council approved business terms with the Panthers to fund improvements to the stadium as part of a 10-year partnership. These terms require the city taxpayers to give $75 million of the $112 million in upgrades to the facility. And how did they fund this? From a 1% food and beverage tax and a 3% occupancy tax. So if you ever have dinner in Charlotte, guess what? You're paying for the stadium. If you ever stay in a hotel in Charlotte, you're paying for the stadium. Even if you don't ever go to the stadium, you're paying for the stadium. But $75 million of $112.5 million. So $37.5 million given to a money-making, profitable sports franchise. So that's a pretty good deal for them. That's a great deal for those guys. So thought I would bring that to your attention in case you didn't know about it. Kind of a fascinating truth there. Now, some other things you didn't know, but I would like to remind you of, and that is, you know, we don't often talk about we do. Unfortunately, I do. Because I think it's important. When I refer to the climate change debate, it has always been, since its inception, the climate change debate is about socialism. And I don't, you know, and I don't want to bore people with the details about socialism and progressive, all these isms. But the short version, the left never dreamed that a climate change scenario would be the greatest gift to them as a way to promote progressive ideology through climate change. They never dreamed it would be a great way to get people out of their cars. It would be a great way to get people out of their homes and put them in denser areas, in more smart growthy areas, and have urban boundaries protected on the outskirts. They never dreamed they'd be able to shut down much of the free enterprise system vis-a-vis all of these government regulations related to climate change that they'd love to see through the UN and other countries. And I'm not going to go into a long thing. But the problem is, if science doesn't corroborate that climate change is happening at an accelerated and dangerous pace, if sea levels are not rising, if critters aren't dying, if the carbon inputs into the system are not generating these horrific outcomes, it undermines the ability to advance the ball from a socialist standpoint. Lest you think North Carolina doesn't do it, yes, certainly the former governor Easley talked about the need for climate change stuff. This renewable energy portfolio standard that we just discussed about, a lot of it is based in climate, lack of science. And so there's a Stephen Goddard, his blog over there, kind of a fascinating, he tracks a lot of this stuff over there about the data that's going on. The measured U.S. temperature data from USHCN shows that the U.S. is on a long-term cooling trend. Now, what he's alleging is that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, funded by your tax dollars, has committed a massive fraud on the American population. Because if you look at the long-term temperatures, it's actually a cooling trend from 1920 until 2015. Cooling trend. You look at the overall temperatures across the country, cooling trend. But the reported temperatures from NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, show a strong warming trend. They accomplish this through a spectacular hockey stick of data tampering, which corrupts the U.S. temperature trend by almost 2 degrees. The biggest component of the fraud is making up data. Almost half of all reported U.S. temperature data is now fake. They fill in missing rural data with urban data. So in other words, when you're looking at data from rural areas of the country, which most of the country was in the 20s, 30s, 40s, heading on, you know, there's more urban stuff more recently. But what they did when they had areas that they didn't have data for, they would, instead of assuming there was kind of a linear thing, they would take the urban data and plug it in. So they take a big city's temperature and plug it into a rural part, like plugging in Raleigh's temperature for a place like Linville in North Carolina, or, you know, some eastern, I don't know, Pasquotank County. So when you look at this, which is fake and which is not, the depths of the fraud breathtaking, but completely consistent with the fraudulent profession, which has become known as climate science. So you would say, Chad, okay, why would they do that? And it's because over the past 25 years, grants being given are being given to those who are presenting the data that most supports that climate change is happening at an accelerated rate that is damaging. So instead of having really, really, really objective science, which is what we desperately need in about every way, we need it in medicine, we need it in life sciences, we need it across the board. We need objective science. We don't have it. Because unfortunately, the competition for grants is driven by ideology more than it is actually the truth. And government has corrupted that process in unbelievable ways. So, the truth of the matter is, since the 20s, the temperature record, measured versus reported, is going down in the U.S. Has since the 20s. And so, it has been exposed that the data is corrupt. Just amazing. But interesting. Now, what we're going to do is, we're going to take a break and come back, and we will talk. I don't know which one we're going to talk about. There's so many different things to talk about here. I did not talk yesterday about the Puerto Rico situation. I think we need to a little bit. But also, I need to talk about the governor has released a statement saying that, you know, he's, I guess, really, really excited about the fact that this surplus happened. But let's look at what the governor says and look at what he is saying. In other words, so he's, I got to read the statement. It's from the governor's office. We'll read what he just released shortly ago here on the show. Much more to discuss here on What Matters with Chad Adams. Stay tuned.
Kelsey, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Dr. Larry Arnn on how America's founders understood the words, all men are created equal.
America's founders knew, obviously, that human beings are not equal in terms of strength or beauty, or in terms of intelligence, industry, or talents. They understood that because of such differences, differences in talents and things like that, some people would be wealthier than others. But human beings are equal, the founders believe, in their possession of natural rights, such as the rights to life, liberty, and property. Today, many Americans reject this equality of rights in order to pursue equality of condition through redistribution or spreading the wealth around, to use a famous formulation. This is destructive of liberty as the founders understood it.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To join the national conversation on the Constitution, go to constitutionminute.org.
Technology moves at the speed of innovation, and today, that's lightning fast. So when you get your hands on the latest tech, don't forget to do the right thing with your old devices. Recycle them. The Consumer Electronics Association and its members are making recycling your old tech device as easy as purchasing new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the responsible recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find lots of tips to simplify your recycling, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Television sets, video game consoles, smartphones, tablets, they're all recyclable. Don't let them clog up your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org. You're sharp enough to get the latest tech tools into your home. Now be responsible enough to get your old devices to the recycler. That's greenergadgets.org.
Good afternoon. Rolling on toward the top of the second hour. Glad to have you as part of our show here at the fine, fine Freedom Action Network. Stay safely ensconced within the Civitas Institute, and glad to have you with us. Again, the big news today, it certainly dominated the news, was the stunning departure of Tony Tata from the Department of Transportation. McCrory's chief of the Department of Transportation turning in his resignation or whatever this afternoon, effective pretty much immediately. That is making the rounds. And this is as the governor is attempting to get through the House and Senate, get them to pull out and do his Connect-NC, his big bonds for transportation and infrastructure. Tony Tata, one of the chief architects of that, just leaving suddenly. Now, many people have speculated for months. There were rumors of his departure. He's written a number of books that he was on the way out the door, wanted to go work other places. Many people were speculating that he was going to run for U.S. Congress in the 3rd District against Walter Jones. Certainly John Boehner, no fan of Walter Jones, the Speaker of the House, you know, has come under fire from the conservative rank and file, and they have made no bones that they're not really happy with John Boehner's leadership. So Boehner, many people are speculating that they would like to see Tony Tata, Brigadier General, retired, worked with DOT all over the place, great resume, pedigree, could spend a lot of time down in the 3rd District challenging Walter Jones. He could take him on next year with a well-funded campaign. He would have to establish himself in that district and somehow unseat Walter Jones if that was his desire to do so. Many people were speculating while he was Secretary of Transportation under McCrory that he would do that. It created such a problem that he kind of had to tell his staff or tell the governor personally that he wasn't doing it and stuck around. Now he is departing. I don't know what he'll do. Many of the people that I know, best evidence, I don't know that I agree with him, but they believe he is going to run. I think it's a bit risky for him to do that, but he may well do it. We will find out if indeed that is something he wants to do. Now, I do want to read. We have talked about what the governor has signaled that he's not a big fan of the tax cuts that the Senate is proposing. And I don't want to beat up on the governor. This is not what this is about. It is interesting that he has written or at least his staff has. Final revenue figures. Governor McCrory praises the surplus. Final revenue figures for the fiscal year ending on June 30th reveal that North Carolina has a $445 million revenue surplus. The surplus is evidence that reforming the tax code and increasing competitiveness are strengthening North Carolina's economy and putting more money into the budget of working families. Governor McCrory said, "We must continue to be wise stewards of the taxpayer resources, as well as maintain our efforts to make state government more efficient and responsive to the people." Now, that's interesting that he says that, because he's wanting to borrow almost $3 billion, and he does not want another tax cut. It's kind of interesting that he recognizes that the tax, or admitting that the tax cut works, but has signaled in other press releases that he's not a big fan of new tax cuts. The surplus this fiscal year is predominantly the product of strong growth in business income, which resulted in a surge of final payments this April. Tax payments in April were up 15 to 20% from last year, which was largely driven by increased business income and capital gains. That took place in other states as well. Final budget figures indicate that revenues have met the trigger required for further corporate tax relief under the 2013 tax reform plan. A 1% reduction in the corporate tax rate will be effective January 1st, making North Carolina's corporate income tax rate the lowest top rate in the country at 4%. The lowest top rate in the country at 4%. Now, some states don't even have a corporate tax rate. So what he should have said was making North Carolina's corporate income tax rate the lowest top rate of any state with a corporate tax rate, because some states just don't have it. It is interesting that he's been really reticent to embrace any additional tax cuts. You would think, given the opportunity, this governor could really, really relish that and have some fun with it. But I don't know that we will. Now, I don't know. This is a governor that still wants many, many more incentives. Now, and if you are a listener to this show, I'm going to jump. This is a pretty big jump, but it's not too far. I have been a long critic of incentives. Having lived and grown up in Puerto Rico, I'm not the biggest fan of incentives because I think they have destroyed Puerto Rico. I think they have absolutely destroyed Puerto Rico. Over 40 years of incentive utilizations has led to an absolute crash. Puerto Rico's irresponsible government, the promises from government, and then people, when the incentives were over, the companies left, and over the series of decades of abuse, and this it became an aspiration for people to work in government. They spent and spent and spent, and now there's an exodus of Puerto Ricans. Now, so Puerto Rico is our, you know, Chicago's kind of, you know, Detroit is our version of Greece. Puerto Rico's kind of our U.S. version of Greece. $75 billion that they owe, and it's a nightmare. So there's a massive exodus of people. You know, the Pew Research Center calculates that the island's population dropped by 11,000 people a year in the 90s. $72 billion in debt, soaring unemployment. Between 2010 and 2013, the loss accelerated to 48,000 people leaving that small island. Puerto Rico is 100 miles long, about 30 miles wide. 48,000 people a year leaving, 2010 to 2013, still leaving. Where are they going? Florida. Why is this important? Because Florida is a major player in presidential politics. In many instances, the delegate count from the state of Florida becomes, they pick and win, the winner and loser. As you remember from the Al Gore, George Bush 2000 election. Why is this important? So Puerto Ricans don't vote in presidential elections. They do vote, but their votes don't count. But when they move to Florida and they become citizens of Florida, they are American citizens. They become voters. And that, this is fascinating, because economic policies, and no one's really writing about this. The economic policies espoused by the U.S. government in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s that led a lot to Puerto Rico's economic collapse is now leading to an exodus that may well swing the presidential election next year. And no, that's not crazy wingbat stuff. If you read, the Washington Post has a great article on the number of people that are settling in Central Florida, in Orlando, the number of Puerto Ricans that are just driving, that are driving that economy, that are moving there. And will be allowed to vote. So Puerto Ricans are blaming politicians for wrecking the island's economy. Now, will they vote Republican? Will they vote Democrat? This is a huge, huge deal. It won't make a big difference necessarily in the primary time, but come the fall, George Bush won the state of Florida by 537 votes in the year 2000. And now you're talking about 1,000 families coming to Florida every month. And think about that. Over the course of the past 4 years, 1,000 a month, times. So that's 12,000 a year, 48,000. I mean, you're talking 100, 200,000 people over the past couple of years that are just Puerto Ricans. So what do you think is going to happen? Who do you think they're going to vote for? Now, the Republicans are telling them what the Republican Party stands for, and a lot of their values align with the Republican Party, especially on social issues like abortion. They're trying to reach out to Puerto Ricans' base. Now, look at the number. I mean, even Jeb Bush is going to Puerto Rico to speak to them. He knows of this migration in Florida. He knows Florida is critical. State Senator Darren Soto, Democrat, running to be Florida's first Puerto Rican in Congress, seeking the ninth seat vacated by Alan Grayson, a Democrat running for U.S. Senate. Many Democrats hope that Soto's candidacy in Central Florida will energize Puerto Rican turnout in the presidential year. The Puerto Rican vote helped Barack Obama win Florida twice, said Soto, but because of the higher influx, it will be a bigger factor. Puerto Rican elected officials from New York and Chicago plan to come down early next year to hold political rallies. 2014 caravans of cars were organized to get the vote out, as 70 cars bearing Puerto Rican flags blaring through a neighborhood. There will be a larger effort in 2016. Coming from Puerto Rico and registering to vote, fairly easy. You just have to prove residency, as people do when they get a driver's license, by showing utility bills or rental leases. It's no different than a person moving there from New York. After finding out whether a person is a U.S. citizen, they usually use a Florida driver's license or ID card to get the person's details and help them sign up. Notice that? A driver's license or ID card to sign up to vote. That's amazing. So Puerto Rico could, and again, isn't it bizarre though? If you really think about this, no one's linking the political policies that led to Puerto Rico's economic doldrums that are leading to a massive problem. But think about this. So Puerto Ricans, if they stayed on the island, they can't sway a presidential election. But when they move to this country, because of the exodus, because of the lack of economic opportunity, because of, and men, nobody's blaming, this is interesting, no one's blaming business and industry for the failure of Puerto Rico. They are blaming the government. A government, an abject government failure. Policies over the past 40 years absolutely failed. Now, think about this. Our governor wants to do many of the policies that the Puerto Ricans did 30 and 40 years ago. They want more money to give away, which is what the Puerto Ricans did. Tax-free. Come down here tax-free 10 years. And then Puerto Rico got into a death spiral when all these companies started pulling out and all that unemployment and all those people wanting government jobs. And then spiraling and promising the world. And it all goes down. And so now those same Puerto Ricans that are young, that are coming of age and can leave because of economic opportunity in other places, specifically Florida. So what isn't it fascinating? Imagine, if you will, because this happened not long ago. You're sitting there in November of 2016. You're watching the election go down. And maybe it's Hillary against insert Republican, Skywalker, Jeb Bush, Donald Trump, whoever. And Florida is the vote count. And someone wins by 20,000 votes. And it's, think about that. And the Puerto Ricans break one way or the other. Puerto Ricans, isn't this amazing? I never thought this would happen. That Puerto Ricans may well determine who the president of the United States may be next year. And that's staggering. And this is fascinating because think about all the effort and time and energy that went into turning North Carolina's primary into a March primary. All that effort. You know, to be on the national stage. I don't know. I'm still not the biggest fan of why we needed to change what we did. It's going to cost us millions of dollars to have two different primaries now. But little things matter, and little things become big things, and big things affect huge outcomes. There's always, it is a dynamic. You hear us talk about statics and dynamics. The dynamic nature of Puerto Rico's economy has become a dynamic impact on our presidential election in May. Just an aside. Not a big deal. I just thought I'd mention it. Now, strange folks in the chat room. It's always funny when the chat room goes a little south on us. But I do want to thank the folks in the chat room for being a part of things. I want to appreciate Lisa Price for all that she does to put this show together. We will be back bright and early tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. The show's rebroadcast. We are speaking to a number of people, and if you are interested in having a show on our network, let us know. We are looking at and evaluating talent and abilities and everything else out there. pleased to be speaking to a number of people about being a part of our network. We would like for you to consider it as well. And as always, write our show numbers down, 919-747-9421, if you'd like to call in to be a part of the show. We can. This is the only show in North Carolina dealing with the issues that we are dealing with. It is primarily focused statewide implication, what matters to North Carolinians. Nobody else. A lot of people are doing a lot of other things. We're doing it in a way that just hasn't been done. And we appreciate you guys being a part of the growth of this show as we move through it. So thanks for being a part of everything. We'll be back bright and early at 3 p.m. tomorrow. Folks, have a great one.